This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
The UK's digital tech scene is accelerating, and the proof is in the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. This year, we celebrate the next generation of pioneering startups that are shaping the tech landscape of tomorrow. The UK is a thriving ecosystem with access to global talent, cutting-edge research, and unparalleled investment opportunities. Your big idea belongs here. Visit great.gov.uk/UKPA to learn more.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. Lifetime ISAs give a government subsidy to people under 40 to help them save a deposit for their first home, except when they don't. Water, water everywhere, and every drop will cost 25% more from April. And people across Northern Ireland, whose power was cut off by Storm Éowyn last week, are powerless to get compensation. But first, a Moneybox listener was shocked to get an energy bill for nearly £6,000 for gas and electricity her supplier said she'd used 2.5 years ago.
This is the bill with a date of the 8th of January on.
Wow. And read that number out there.
£5,768.09.
I mean, seeing it in black and white there is a bit more scary.
Yes, it is. And then that's for a period from 21st of June 2021 till 11th of June 2022.
And that's 2.5 years ago.
Yes.
Well, that's Hayley talking to our reporter, Dan Whitworth, and he's here. Dan, you've been looking into this story in detail, and you found it goes way beyond Hayley.
It does, Paul, yes. This is about something called back billing, and that is when energy suppliers send customers a new bill charging them for energy used more than 12 months beforehand. And this is really black and white, Paul. They are not allowed to do it. Back billing was banned by the regulator Ofgem back in 2018.
So if it's clearly against Ofgem rules, it shouldn't be happening, but it did with Hayley. Well, what's the extent of the problem?
Well, Moneybox has learned in the 12 months to the end of September last year, 3,308 people complained to the Energy Ombudsman about back billing. And that number is likely to be just the tip of the iceberg, as only a small proportion of overall complaints make it as far as the Ombudsman.
So it's clearly happening to a lot of people. Now, Hayley showed you a bill, a paper bill. Is that how it started?
Well, no, she actually printed that bill off to show me. She was never actually sent a paper bill. The first Hayley knew of it was when, out of the blue, her supplier, E.ON Next, sent her a text saying that she owed £5,768.09 from 2.5 years ago and said she'd have to pay it.
It was very shocking and it was concerning, you know. I'm not going to say that I weren't worried, because I was. Even though I knew that I would fight it, it's still obviously a vast amount of money that would take me an extremely long time to pay back.
Well, clearly a shock for her there, Dan. What did Hayley do?
You know what, Paul? She fought her corner. She fired off an email straight away, then got researching online. She learned about back billing, what it is, how suppliers aren't allowed to do it, and then called her supplier. Eventually, after getting lots of different information from lots of different people, she got that bill cancelled. But just because back billing is so clearly against the rules doesn't mean it's easy to deal with. In several cases I've investigated, each person had to speak to multiple customer service staff on multiple phone calls before getting their bills cancelled. So it can be a real fight, even for a customer who can stand their ground. Of course, Hayley's worried about those who might not be able to do that.
It's actually quite sad because, you know, I'm in a position to fight it, but not everybody would be. And, you know, you could have elderly or vulnerable or isolated people who would see this and think, oh, no, I need to pay it. And there's nobody there to tell them, actually, you don't owe this amount of money.
Well, what has her supplier and the industry, and indeed the regulator Ofgem, had to say to you about this, Dan?
Well, Hayley's supplier is E.ON Next. That's part of the E.ON Group. And it says it sends out tens of millions of bills each year and that it has systems in place to stop back bills from being sent out. But that Hayley's case was due to human error. It's apologised and is now reviewing its back billing processes. The regulator Ofgem told me it's a supplier's responsibility to handle complaints effectively, adding it's committed to review the rules around billing. And I discovered that of all the big five energy suppliers, they have a similar number of complaints on this issue. So I asked Energy UK, which speaks for suppliers, and it told me suppliers have a duty of care to customers and are continuously working to improve practices.
Thanks, Dan. Well, listening to that is Alex Belsham-Harris, the head of energy policy at Citizens Advice. Alex Belsham-Harris, this is an absolute rule. You can't be sent a new bill for gas or electricity used more than 12 months ago. Simple. How do companies get it wrong?
As you say, these bills should never have gone out, and it's really not good enough. Unfortunately, we see this problem quite often at Citizens Advice. We helped 60,000 people last year with billing issues to do with the energy. Only a quarter of those related to what we call catch-up bills, bills where you're being asked to pay for energy that you used in the past. And the longer back those bills go, the more likely it is that these rules are being broken. It can be for a range of reasons. Sometimes it's that the bills have been going to the wrong address, or that the bills haven't been sent at all, like in Hayley's case, or that you've just been getting an estimated bill for a long time. But regardless, the supplier should be stopping these bills before they go out. And if you are realising, actually, you know, this bill is wrong and you're contacting them, they should be stopping the bill straight away on the first point of contact, not having to have this long back and forwards like in Hayley's case.
And just to be clear, it must be the first bill for this energy that you've used. If you just don't pay for 12 months, it doesn't count, obviously. So it must be the first bill for that energy. But we have had an email from someone saying, well, you know, they owe this money. Why shouldn't they pay it anyway?
Yeah, so the reason the rules are there are to protect people from bills that can go back years, and that really can rack up huge amounts. So the average bill that we helped people with in relation to catch-up billing was £2,500. It's a huge amount to ask of people, and suppliers are really the ones who should be making the effort to make sure they're sending these bills out to the right place and getting a meter reading to make sure they're accurate. And particularly if you have a smart meter, you should be getting an accurate bill every time. So the rules are there to protect people from poor supplier practice, but we know that at the moment they're really not doing that job properly. The size of these bills has grown in line with the rise in energy prices, and so we're seeing people, even within the rules, being hit with bills that they just can't afford to pay.
Yes, I mean, we've had emails about this already, and several from that same firm and going out at much the same time as Hayley's. Given that there are these errors, what are customers' rights when it comes to back billing?
So if you do realise that there's a bill that you think isn't right or there's a mistake, definitely speak to your energy supplier. They'll be able to let you know what's gone on and hopefully should fix it. But if you're not getting the right level of service, which does happen too often, sadly, do reach out to a charity like Citizens Advice. We can offer a support, or contact the Energy Ombudsman like Hayley did. They'll be able to make sure that you get a resolution to your case and force the supplier to comply.
Yeah, so even if your supplier won't listen, maybe the staff get it wrong, or as you say, somebody gets it wrong and insists you owe it, you can complain and you can go to the Energy Ombudsman, which should resolve it. In fact, some people have emailed us this morning to say they've done just that and it was resolved. But really, this is a failure of the firms to implement a rule that's been around for several years, isn't it? Should the regulator, Ofgem, be doing more, making sure the systems are in place and indeed fining firms if they get it wrong?
Absolutely. Ofgem said they're reviewing billing practices, and the first step of that should really be making sure that firms are following the existing rules and taking action where they're not. But we also think that it needs to strengthen the rules and go further. So whereas currently you can be billed for up to a year, we think that should be reduced, particularly for people with smart meters who should be getting an accurate bill every time.
Yes, I mean, we get, and I'm sure you get, a lot of complaints from people who get bills that weren't accurate. Indeed, Hayley's may not have been accurate. So is that part of the problem, that bills aren't accurate and yet they're also sent too late, briefly?
Yeah, exactly. So if you haven't sent in the meter reading, or your smart meter has stopped working and hasn't been sending in readings on your behalf, then you could have been getting an estimated bill for quite a long period of time. And then when you do send in a meter reading and that's corrected, that could really, at that point, trigger a large back bill.
Alex Belsham-Harris from Citizens Advice, thanks.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
The following feature is paid and presented by the Department for Business and Trade.
My uncle was diagnosed with cancer, and I learned that a significant number of my family members, more than 5, had a history of cancer. I decided to be part of Massive Bio to help cancer patients globally and potentially help find a cure faster through clinical trials.
Welcome to the United Kingdom, where the brightest tech innovators reshaping our world are celebrated. This year, the Department for Business and Trade are spotlighting global, trailblazing entrepreneurs through the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. The winner of the AI category was Massive Bio, whose co-founder is Charti Chujulo.
Our company is at the forefront of integrating artificial intelligence into oncology, aiming to revolutionize cancer treatment and clinical enrollment. The Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards means a lot to the team that work with us in the Department of Business and Trade. So it's a great recognition of the efforts and impact to cancer patients globally. It's a testament of trust and interest that will fuel our growth. The UK offers a vibrant ecosystem for tech innovation with access to worldwide class research institutions. By establishing a presence in the United Kingdom, Massive Bio can tap into this rich pool of talent and collaborate with leading experts in artificial intelligence and healthcare, enhancing our capabilities and positioning us as a key player in the United Kingdom's artificial intelligence landscape.
From cutting-edge AI to digital trade solutions, these innovators are building tomorrow's world today. Learn how the United Kingdom supports tech pioneers at great.gov.uk/UKPA.
Lifetime ISAs, or LISAs, are a way for people under 40 to save up for a deposit on a first-time home or to use in retirement when they reach 60. Those savings are boosted by a 25% government bonus. Now, Parliament's Treasury Committee has launched a call for evidence about whether the LISA should carry on or indeed carry on and be amended. In the last 6 tax years, around 250,000 people have used a LISA to save up a deposit and buy their first home. But the rules about putting money in and taking it out are very strict. In fact, more people have broken the withdrawal rules than have used a LISA to buy a house. One of the rules is that the home people buy cannot cost more than £450,000, and that cap hasn't changed since 2017. And in London, that's now often not enough, as 2 listeners found out. Rebecca first, then Joe.
I looked to access the money a few months ago when it became obvious that me and my friend both wanted to buy a house together. We were very excited until I saw, one of the clauses was the cap of that property had to be £450,000. I then immediately typed in 2-bed, 1-bathroom in London. You will not find a property worth less than £500,000. I looked at how I can withdraw the money. I learnt that not only would I lose the annual government bonus of £1,000 for every £4,000 I put in, but that I would be charged a penalty on 6.25% of my own savings. And I honestly felt sick. I felt foolish because my friends, who, God bless them, had not spent the time that I had looking at the best schemes, desperately hoping that this would work for me one day. If I just printed that money out and put it under my bed or let it sit in an account with accruing no interest, they'd have been better off than I was.
I originally took out a lifetime ISA because it suited my needs at the time. I was living in Yorkshire. The issues I found are that as my relationship has changed, as my work status has changed, and now that I'm living in London rather than living in Yorkshire, is that for a young couple looking to start a family, a 450k home is not anywhere near where we might be looking. It makes me feel slightly stupid for having taken one out in the first place. The whole intention of the lifetime ISA effectively useless in London, unless you're looking to either live right on the outskirts or looking for a very small one-bed flat.
Joe and Rebecca, each trying to buy their first home in London using a LISA. Well, listening to all that is Alice Hayne. She's personal finance analyst at Best Invest. And Alice Hayne, I'm sure a lot of people listening are thinking, £450,000, that's plenty for a first home. Is this something you get complaints about?
It is plenty for a first home, but it depends on where you live. So Joe and Rebecca live in London. The average house price in London is now actually over £500,000. So lots of parts of the country, you'll probably still be able to buy a first home without a problem. But it's not just London. There are some pockets around London or other parts of the UK where you also might struggle to get something under that £450,000. But you've got to remember, people are buying houses later in life. Affordability is an issue. And people may not be buying a house in their 20s. They may be buying it in their 30s, even their 40s. And they've got families.
Yes, and for their different reasons, both Rebecca and Joe needed a two-bedroom place, not a one-bedroom place. The Treasury told us across the vast majority of the country and in most London boroughs, the average price for a first-time home remains below the £450,000 cap. But house prices have gone up hugely since LISAs began in 2017 throughout the country and in London, haven't they? Should they be raised, do you think, with that?
Yes, the house prices have gone up by more than a third since then, and that's according to figures from Land Registry. And if the cap had risen in line with that level of growth, you'd be looking at a cap of about £600,000. So effectively, you want that cap to go up. You could potentially index it to inflation. So it does, in fact, it factors in those rising property prices and makes it fairer for people that are trying to buy that first home.
Yes, but I mean, on my calculations, this subsidy to first-time buyers cost around £170 million last year. It would cost even more if that cap was raised. And we all know the Chancellor's trying to save every penny. She might even want to scrap or restrict it, mightn't she?
She may want to scrap it, but the thing is that the LISA, like any ISA, is a great way to encourage people to save and invest for their future. And the thing, you want people to be thinking about how they're going to save for those really key lifetime goals. And, you know, buying a property is a key lifetime goal and retiring is a key lifetime goal. So you want people to channel funds into that, and giving them that lovely 25% bonus is a good way to do that.
Yes, and of course it has been a success. Last tax year, 57,000 people used one to help them buy their first home, and that's up on the year before. It's a success story, isn't it?
Yes, for a lot of people, it works. The average withdrawal rate for the most recent figures was £15,000. You know, it gets people onto the ladder. They've had that nice bonus from the government and it helps them save for their deposit faster. So used in the right way, it works. But there are issues and the penalty is quite harsh.
Yes, I mean, I was going to say Rebecca fell foul of one of the rules, didn't she? One of the other rules that she can't buy the home she wanted. And now she'll have to take the money out and pay a penalty of 6.25% on what she put in. And the Treasury makes money back out of that. People can end up worse off. It's important to check the rules before you embark on this.
Absolutely, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not only losing the money that you're not only losing that government bonus, but you're losing your own money. And that seems very unfair because you're being penalised for saving for the very goal that you're meant to be saving for. So always check the rules with these products. But generally, I do think LISAs are good and they're a useful savings tool.
And briefly tell us, should you use it for a pension? You can use it to save up till you're 60. I mean, Rebecca said you couldn't afford to leave it in there that long, but you can do that.
You can do. I think whether or not it works out for you depends on whether you've got a workplace pension. You've got to remember you get tax relief on your pension savings. And if you've got a workplace scheme, then you get your employer is very likely to match your contribution and maybe match a higher contribution as well. And you can also benefit from salary sacrifice. So it depends on whether you're a basic rate taxpayer, because the tax relief is the same as the LISA bonus, but a higher or additional rate taxpayers, it really does make sense to stick with a pension because you're going to get that additional tax relief that they can claim back.
Alice Hayne, thanks. And you can give evidence to the Select Committee. Look up Treasury Committee on the Parliament website and you'll find it. And also, if you do have a LISA or you want to start one, remember those restrictions, paying in and taking money out. Details at gov.uk. Thanks again, Alice Hayne. The price people in England and Wales pay for water and sewage services will rise sharply from the 1st of April. Figures announced this week revealed those bills will rise by more than 25%, and that's higher than predicted before Christmas because these new figures take account of inflation, and these increases are front-loaded, so the biggest rise will be this April, followed by smaller ones over the next 4 years. Dan Whitworth's been plunging into the cold water of the details. That's his job. Dan, how much will the average bill be from April?
OK, so across England and Wales, the average annual bill will rise to £603. That's a rise of more than 25%. The increase in the average bill is around £10 a month, from £40 to £50. But millions of households face even steeper rises because they vary from region to region, with some as high as a 47% rise. Now, you can check your individual price rise online at water.org.uk and search average annual bill.
And why are bills rising so much?
Oh, two things mentioned here by the trade body Water UK. One is that water companies will invest a record £20 billion in 2025 to 2026 to, as they put it, secure our water supplies and end sewage entering our rivers and seas. But because bills are now so high, they will also increase support so that more than 3 million low-income households will receive reduced bills. It will spend more than £4 billion on that over the next 5 years, and both those things will be funded by these rise in customer bills.
Yes, well, consumer groups, of course, are warning that this rise will mean more households fall into debt. What is the best advice for someone worried about affording this?
Well, these rises start on April the 1st, so if you think you'll struggle to afford them, or quite frankly, are already struggling with water bills, contact your supplier. Water companies offer what are called social tariffs for low-income households, which we've spoken about before on Money Books, as you know, Paul. Different suppliers do have different qualifying criteria, but the important thing is to ask for the help that is there, and a lot more people will be entitled to that help from April.
Thanks, Dan. And the Consumer Council for Water has useful guidance on whether it would be cheaper to have a water meter than pay a fixed charge. These increases are for England and Wales, as we said. Earlier this week, it was announced water bills in Scotland will rise by almost 10% from April. In Northern Ireland, domestic customers do not pay directly for their water. Thousands of homes in Northern Ireland are without power still from more than a week after Storm Éowyn hit Ireland and parts of the UK. The storm also badly affected areas in Scotland and the north of England, where some people lost power for days.
A rare red weather warning for Northern Ireland and central Scotland.
We are expecting significant disruption to travel, including public transport, and we're also expecting potential power outages.
Hour upon hour, that wind has really, really built up, and you feel the full force of it when it hits you just like this.
After a night which saw temperatures fall to around freezing, 189,000 customers are still without a power supply this morning.
Well, Storm Éowyn was a category red storm that brought record-breaking winds, leaving thousands of people without power for days, disrupting their lives and bringing unexpected costs. In England, Scotland and Wales, there's a compensation scheme for power cuts caused by severe weather. That can give customers between £85 and as much as £2,000 for a long outage. But that scheme, imposed by the regulator Ofgem, doesn't cover Northern Ireland, which has no compensation for power cuts caused by storms. Michael lives near Ballycastle, County Antrim, and he told our reporter Emma Devlin he'd been without power all week.
So obviously we got the sort of notice from the news that the storm was incoming. We would be living in quite a rural place, so we were a bit worried that we might get badly affected. But around 7 o'clock in the morning, the power did go out. And you know, like everyone else, we stayed inside. We're now, I think it's day 7 later, and we're still without power. So we're just basically trying to get by as best we can with what we have. Two young children at home at the minute, which is very difficult given they don't have any light or heat sources really, apart from a small fire that we can use.
Can you talk to me a wee bit about the impact, if there's any costs associated with that?
Well, firstly, we've had to go out and sort of buy new supplies, just portable lanterns, try and light up the house. We've had to buy wood in for the fire to try and get some heat into the house. We're having to get takeaways generally, or going around to in-laws' houses and trying to get food. As I say, with the kids, it's trying to keep them as warm as possible. So there has been like additional costs with travel and just going out of your normal routine. We don't have any internet at the minute apart from what's on our phones. But as I say, because we're quite rural, it's not really feasible to use. We tend to use Wi-Fi calling and such for the mobile phones, but that's not an option. We would also pay for Sky TV, which we can't use.
What kind of information have you had from the supplier?
We did have two engineers come out to the house who have identified that the problem is on a pole, and they have referred it to the line team. They've told me it is a 5-minute fix, which makes it slightly frustrating that, you know, 7 days later, we're still waiting for a 5-minute fix.
Michael speaking to EMA. A Northern Ireland Electricity Networks has said it could be Monday before all properties are reconnected. EMA's here. EMA, you've been following this story closely. How many customers are without power now?
As of Saturday morning, NI Electricity said approximately 4,000 customers remain off supply, with power now restored to 281,000 properties.
Now, I mentioned the scheme for compensation in the rest of the UK, and also there's not a similar scheme, is there, in Northern Ireland?
No, but this week the First and Deputy First Ministers of Northern Ireland did say that they'd urged NI Electricity to consider giving a goodwill payment to customers who lost power as a result of the storm. We asked NIE about that, and it told us it's getting calls relating to potential goodwill or compensation payments, but that its priority at the moment is supporting people who are still without power, particularly its most vulnerable customers. We know discussions about compensations have been happening between the supplier, the executive and the utility regulator, but we don't have any more detail on that at the moment.
And tell us more about the compensation scheme for people affected in Scotland, England and Wales.
Ofgem have a special scheme for giving out compensation when people lose power after an extreme weather event. Ofgem's storm categories are different to what you might see in the weather forecast, but it classed Storm Eowyn as a Category 2 storm, which means people who lost power for more than 48 hours should be eligible for £85 of compensation and an extra £40 for every six-hour period without power afterwards. There's a cap of £2,000 if it's off for a fortnight or more. The Energy Networks Association says that the compensation should be paid automatically with a cheque sent to the property that has been without power.
Thanks, Ema. And NIE Networks warned there are criminals about sending texts, even calling about at homes in their name. It won't send text messages, and if anyone does call, check their ID very carefully and don't give them any personal details. Well, the chill winds of time have swept through our studios, but I can just squeeze in a reminder that you can tell us about the winds, ill or good, that are blowing through your finances. Email moneybox@bbc.co.uk or send us a comment or a voice note, which we love, on WhatsApp 03306 783 183. And remember, you can listen to the show live every Saturday at noon on BBC Radio 4, and Moneybox Live is on Wednesdays at 3. Next up, Felicity Hannah will be getting answers to your questions and comments on the cost of care in later life. In this podcast, the reporters were Dan Whitworth and Ema Devlin, researcher Joe Krasner, studio manager Patrick Shaw. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Paul Lewis, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen first on BBC Sounds.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
The following feature is paid and presented by the Department for Business and Trade.
We really work as hackers would do. We call ourselves ethical hackers, meaning that we exploit the same tools, or hopefully even better tools, because we developed our own, to search IT networks, IT assets for vulnerabilities. And when we found vulnerabilities, rather than exploiting them for malicious purposes, we inform the owner of the assets about the vulnerability, about the risk that they are experiencing.
Welcome to the United Kingdom, where the brightest tech innovators reshaping our world are celebrated. This year, the Department for Business and Trade are spotlighting global, trailblazing entrepreneurs through the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards.
The winner of the cybersecurity category was Cylock, who worked with companies to find weaknesses in their IT systems. Hear from one of the co-founders, Alessio Salzano.
We are so excited to winning the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Award. We really think that it's a great initiative for international companies. We're so excited about scaling Cylock in the UK because it is one of the leading countries in cybersecurity awareness, not just in Europe, but also in the world. The innovation that we have seen here is crucial for the development of cybersecurity and especially for the application of AI to cybersecurity. We have seen so many new tools, so many new talents emerging from the UK and leading globally, and we want to be one of them.
From cutting-edge AI to digital trade solutions, these innovators are building tomorrow's world today. Learn how the United Kingdom supports tech pioneers at great.gov.uk/UKPA.